Hello and welcome again to another edition of Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by the Torn by Sports Podcast Network and blogtalkradio.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hello, John.
Hello, Alan.
And hello, Devin.
Hello, guys.
We're back at it. How are you guys doing?
Life is good.
Awkward silence there when I ask.
That's how we're doing.
No one knows how we're doing.
We're doing awkward.
and those of you listening tomorrow, you're gonna hear. I'm sitting here in a room with two of the most adorable golden retriever puppies you will ever see.
They're not just retrievers, Alan.
No.
No, they are golden doodles.
Golden doodles.
Oodle a doodle.
Holy crap, they're huge too. But they're beautiful. So. Happy for Devin and his family to get some new additions. So awesome.
And the best part is they're jazz fans.
Ooh.
They both liked watching the game last night. And you know what?
So did I. let's get into that. The Jazz are 24-16. They're fifth in the West. I mean, has that changed after tonight's scores? Or are we still sitting at fifth?
I believe we're in a tie.
Yeah, we're in tie for fifth.
Okay. But let's get to it. Win number 24, fantastic. I know both of you got a chance to watch. I got a chance to be there, and let me tell you, crazy, crazy atmosphere last night, and it was a packed house too, so incredible. Initial thoughts, John?
Well, I think it's just nice to be home again. The road trip was starting to look ugly, but once they got home again and could relax, you know, they look like the team we were hoping they were once they would be fully healthy. Even when the Cavs had that run in the third quarter, it Jazz just were able to get in a huddle and come back out and then take control right over again. I loved watching it. I loved watching it be competitive the entire time. Even with that lapse, I didn't feel like this was the end. I felt like, okay, Cleveland had their run, but it's still going to come down to the wire. And it ultimately didn't, you know, they won by 8. So
what were your thoughts?
It was a great booster for them.
What were your thoughts, Devin? Anything in addition?
No.
Okay.
No, I thought it was a good game. I thought it was a great night for Gordon, you know, and I think last year when they hosted the Cavs, Gordon had his moment to shine, if I remember. Was that last season he hit that buzzer beater?
No. Last year, no Gordon Hayward. And I can't remember
right.
who else didn't
there.
Play. And the Jazz won that game without Gordon Hayward, without their best players. In fact, I think it was another Ingles night to shine a year ago.
It was. That was a late night game on TNT or something like that. That's right. But
yes,
the year before was the Gordon shot. But this year, it just seems like he likes to show up when he can.
Right.
Against LeBron.
So here's a couple of observations I want to throw out. First of all, weird first half. Okay. I have not been a part of probably a weirder first half when it comes to a few things. I mean, you had both teams get called for delay of game, not only warnings, but technicals. So they each had two delay of games in the first half, which I also felt on both instances that second call against both teams was probably not warranted. Then you had LeBron get mad about a no call, and it was a correct no call, only to get a technical on the very next time down the floor when Mac wraps him up. It was just, I don't know how you guys felt, but the tension in the first half was really just weird. The game was weird as a whole, but the third quarter is where it just went crazy. And like you said, there were runs in the third quarter. Jazz had a 15-point lead at half. First part of the third quarter, LeBron scores 13, and suddenly the Cavs are up 2. We haven't heard from Gordon Hayward to that moment, and then he goes off. Gordon picks up 11 in the third quarter as the Jazz rally and take a 9-point lead, 8-point lead, 9-point lead to end the third quarter. Gordon was magnificent. He matched LeBron point for point, run for run, right down to the very end of the game. It was beautiful.
Yep, it was tremendous. And looking ahead, they have two more home games in a row, both very, very, you should win them.
Yeah.
And so they play Detroit next, and if they beat Detroit, they will then be 25-16. That will put them exactly on pace for a 50-win season.
Yeah, because it's right at the halfway point, isn't it?
Yeah, and our caveat every week is even with all these injuries, they're still perfectly on pace to be a 50-win team. And if they are able to be that much healthier in the second half than they were in the first half, then, you know, 53-54 win team's looking pretty good.
Absolutely. And let it be known, we started this season on our show talking about how many wins. I don't remember what you two picked. I said 51. I thought you guys were right around 50. So here they are on pace. Sounds pretty good at this point in time.
Yep.
So go ahead.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about the upcoming week before we get back to Gordon Hayward.
Okay.
Detroit is not in great shape right now. They're currently 18-22. They're missing minor pieces to their rotation. I wouldn't say they're missing anyone major. John Lure has played well for them, but he's a bench guy. Reggie Bullock's been out most of the year, but he wasn't that important. But you know, they're a team where they have a great starting lineup and a thin bench. So, you know, we shouldn't be surprised if Detroit gets off to a hot start, but that is a team that the Jazz should be able to ultimately control.
Agreed.
After that, they have Orlando, and Orlando's been having a really weird season. I'm seeing rumors that they're looking at trading some of their lottery draft picks. Like Mario Hezonja hasn't really been anything for them, and for the right price, they'd be willing to get rid of Aaron Gordon. You know, I don't really know what the plan is there. They're 16-23. They looks like they had recent injuries to Serge Ibaka and Elfrid Payton.
Oh dear.
But they could both be, it looks like they're both questionable for their game tonight. So they'll probably both play by the time the Jazz see them. But man, if those guys miss any amount of time,
well,
it just makes Orlando that much worse.
Yeah, it does. And then, and by the way, that's a back-to-back, Detroit and Orlando, but they're both home. It's one of
Games. They're both lottery East teams. They should really beat them.
It's one of only two stretches, I think, in the season where the Jazz have back-to-backs at home, which is to actually, I think, consider it a bit of a luxury. I mean, you have a back-to-back is one thing in travel, but to have a back-to-back at home where you finish one night, you can rest it off, stay home, come back the next day, no travel involved, it's an advantage, I think.
Yeah, that's a great advantage. I mean, if a back-to-back, even if one of them's home, like tonight the Cavs and Blazers are playing, and sure, the Blazers are getting this home game, but they don't really get this advantage because they only got into town at 1 p.m. that day.
Yeah, that's brutal. That's brutal.
You're kind of killing their home court advantage when you schedule stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, you inspired me to do a quick perusal, and I believe that is the only back-to-back home situation they have.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, and so then their next two road teams are Phoenix and Dallas, both of whom are, you know, struggling. I mean, and then there's a home game against the Indiana. So they could very realistically, including this Cleveland game,
be on a
six-game win streak.
Absolutely. Well, and then, you know, what's even great about it, after Phoenix, they have three nights off. You get some rest. Not that they need it because they're 100% healthy, but that's 3 days to, you know, maybe they don't want the rest at this point in time. Maybe 3 days you want to stay in rhythm. I don't know how that will affect them against Dallas. I wonder if they'll come out maybe a little bit rusty in that game, but I don't know. And that, and again, we're still a week. We're still 10 days away from that game. So,
right.
But yeah, you're right. That's a six game. I mean, you look ahead to the schedule the rest of the month, the Jazz really could be looking very good to end January. It's realistically very, it looks very good.
Yeah. I was hoping that we would get another story this week on the second round of voting for All-Stars. I wanted to go back to Gordon Hayward, and let's go over the article that you wrote for Twin by Sports.
Okay. I think we've talked about it. I took some time and talked about, you know, the back and forth between he and LeBron last night, which I don't remember if last night's game was on national TV or if it was just regional, but I think Gordon turned some heads last night. He had to have. And then to top it off, you know, you look at Gordon, he's scored, I think I put in there, he has scored 30 points, 5 games this season, which is 2 more than he had all of last season. He's had 10 games of 28 or more. He's much improved this year. And what's interesting about it, and you know, this goes into the All-Star play, Gordon is not flashy. If you watch in games, a lot of people's like, why doesn't he take over? Why doesn't he do this? That's not Gordon's style. Gordon is a very, you know, he'll let the game come to him. He's patient. He's crafty. He doesn't have anything eye-popping, you know, and flashy in his game. He just goes about his business. And for Utah Jazz fans, that shouldn't be anything new. We've had guys like Carl. We've had guys like John. We've had guys recently like Memo and guys like that that, you know what, they're not flashy with their game. They just go about it, about their business. The unfortunate part for Gordon is I don't know if that bodes well for him for an All-Star pick. I would hope so. And so I encourage people, vote. Vote every day. Vote as much as you can, because give him that opportunity. But, John, do you see a scenario here where he makes the All-Star team, other than maybe the coach is bringing him in?
Well, since it's – I mean, he won't be a starter. And that's really the only place where the fan vote matters, where the reserves are with the coaches. Yeah, there's a scenario I can see that, because he's the third best small forward in the West.
Right.
And we determine that after Kawhi and Durant.
Yeah.
It's really him. And so, yeah, there is a place for him. But there's so many good West people that we can't be surprised if he misses it. Because, you know, Gobert could get one of those spots. I think Gobert right now is the more exciting option for the coaches, just because he's such a star on defense that his numbers are more unique that way.
Right.
So,
well, and
yeah,
Gobert,
either way,
I think in Gobert's case, he also has the backing of being a foreign player too. So he's got a lot more of a voting pool to come from if the fans vote him in. Ultimately, I don't know if that's going to be the case, because unfortunately, and let's rag about it for a minute, Zaza Pachulia, as at last we talked, was one of the starters voted in. And well, there you go, Golden State lovers. I that's a travesty in my mind. It should be Gobert. But, you know, I'm just looking at Hayward. I mean, you look at his line alone last night. You know, he missed 2 shots all night long. He missed, what, 1 or 2 free throws. He was 83% from the floor, 80% from 3, and 80% at the free throw line. And he was a rebound shy of a double-double. Numbers like that, and you're going against LeBron James, speak volumes to the kind of player you are.
Yeah, and there were a lot of national guys watching the game. I could just tell, you know, following their Twitter.
Well, and then, you know, and I don't think it's any coincidence, and this is something I wrote in there, and I want your thoughts on that. I don't think it's any coincidence that the Jazz are having the success they are right parallel with the way Gordon Hayward's playing. I mean, he's raised his game to a new level, and wouldn't you know it, the Jazz have raised their game to a new level. I know a lot of people can say, well, additions of George Hill, additions of Joe Johnson. Well, yes, Gordon Hayward now has the supporting cast he hasn't had in the past, but Gordon's level has jumped. You add the supporting cast, and look at where they're at. They're 8 games above 500, and they're heading towards the playoffs. It's going to happen. So, you know, I don't know what more I can say about Gordon. Am I gushing over him? I probably am. And if listeners are listening and they don't like this idea, I'm sorry. He's the best player on the Jazz team, and there's a reason we gush over him, because he's having one of those seasons.
Well, the numbers bear it out. There, one of my new favorite sites is NBAMath.com.
Right.
And they have this metrics of total points allowed. It basically takes – offensive points added above an average player, and it also calculates defensive points saved comparatively to the average player. So it's similar to Locke's pack formula.
Right.
You know, it's a little different. And it also looks at defense. And so then they come up with this total points allowed score. And they keep it maintained daily. So at each day there's an update. And you can kind of track which players are doing the most good or the most harm. And so the highest score, to give a range idea, is 394.47 total points added, which is Russell Westbrook. And he's far and away number one. And the top 10 shouldn't be surprising. It's Westbrook, Harden, Greek Freak. Okay, maybe that's a little surprising that he's third. LeBron James, Chris Paul, Kevin Durant, Kyle Lowry, Jimmy Butler, Kawhi Leonard, and DeMarcus Cousins.
I will say this. It's no surprise that Greek Freak's number three. He's having that kind of a season. That kind of a season I think everybody expected to this point. He's playing extremely well. So, and another note on Westbrook, I think tonight he just notched another triple-double in a win tonight, I think, if I remember seeing that, didn't he? Mm. I mean, is there any surprise there?
No.
All right, so, yeah.
I also wanted to go ahead and point out the bottom 10 just for info.
Please do.
The worst score is minus 99, and your bottom 10 are Brandon Ingram is the worst in the NBA by this metric. Second is Devin Booker. He's been wildly inefficient in Phoenix so far. Third is Andrew Wiggins, which might explain why the Timberwolves just can't win. He's statistically just a really bad defensive player. Emmanuel Mudiay, Isaiah Whitehead, Malcolm Delaney, Jeff Green, Samaj Kristen, and Jamal Crawford.
Okay, Mudiay.
That's nine. And so 10th is Jarrell Martin.
Mudiay might be the player on that list that surprises me a bit, given where he's playing. Because Denver's been not horrible defensively. They've been pretty decent the last couple of years, haven't they?
Yeah, largely due to their big men, but Mudiay was one of the worst statistically last year with RPM, so I'm not surprised he's one of the worst again this year. I would have hoped that he would have had some improvement, but
right.
Apparently it's just still a big problem.
Interesting. That some of those guys on that list don't surprise me. Jamal Crawford being one of them. That doesn't surprise me at all.
Clippers bench has been bad this year and he's the anchor. So,
yep.
Yeah, that's not surprising. Just to go over Jazz players, the ones who are positive. In fact, I'll just put it this way. Of the 449 players, Rudy Gobert is 15th. Gordon Hayward is 21st. So you have two of the top 21 most efficient basketball players by this metric. Rudy Gobert, Gordon Hayward, third is George Hill, fourth is Joe Ingles, and then some of your guys who hardly ever play are in here: Jeff Withey, Joel Bolenboy, Hal Netto, Alec Burks, and then it's Trey Lyles. Sorry.
Bless you.
But then the worst. Well, let me say this: Who do you think the worst player is by this metric
on the Jazz?
Mac. Yeah.
I don't know if I'd say it's
second
Mac.
Worst.
He's second worst. I'd have to. Have you mentioned Lyles yet?
Yes.
Okay, so then I'd have to go. Man, who haven't you mentioned? I'm trying to think.
It's Boris Diaw.
Okay.
His offensive measure is minus 38 points. His defense is only minus 1.1. But that makes him the lowest ranking on the Jazz.
What kind of so interesting about his offense, though? Because I don't know. I guess in these ratings, you have to take in effect a lot of different stats. Because I feel like he fits in the mold of what the Jazz do because they're a passing team. They like to get that pass, and I feel like Boris is perfect for that. But maybe I'm wrong.
No, he has his he has certain games where he's really well, and then he has games where he's really bad.
Right.
And we've seen both. And so right now it's bearing out that he does more harm than good. But he did so much harm in the early in the season that maybe that's just dragging him down the rest of the season.
That's what I'm wondering, because he was, that first 2 weeks, he was pretty horrible. I know I had a couple of questions on along the lines of where you were going, but now I forgot. Observations on that line. I can't remember his name, from ESPN, tweeted out this morning that following the win over the Cavs last night, the Jazz regained the number one defensive team in the league prize after last night. They're number one in the league again.
Yep.
So,
I think that was Tim McMahon.
Yeah, Tim McMahon. That's right. I was getting the name wrong. I couldn't remember. Another mention, you mentioned Joe Ingles on that. Just a quick sidestep. I know we've been on Gordon, but Joe Ingles, surprised or not surprised at how good defensively he's been?
Not surprised. He's shown improvement from last year. We all figured he would fall out of the rotation this year because of all the upgrades at the bench, and he's actually made himself that much more valuable.
Well, and he took on LeBron last night, and he played well against LeBron at times. Defensively.
Yeah, there is not a single player in the NBA that intimidates him.
Yeah.
And he does it with a smile on his face. But anytime any player on the other team tries to get all tough guy, Joe is right there in his face with a big smile, like, don't even think about it.
Well, and he takes pride in what he does, too. You can tell he does. And I get a kick out of watching him play because he takes pride in the little things.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying Joe this year. I know there were some games last year where Ingles was like the dog, but he's filling his role exactly how he needs to. And I thought for sure that Joe would not be on the team next year, but I can't help but think that the Jazz might want to
shore him up. Yeah, I agree.
He's only 29. I mean,
right?
Let's keep this going.
That's young.
Yeah. Well,
younger than George Hill.
Well, and look at him. I mean, he's your perfect. How many times over the last few years have Jazz fans asked for the perfect 3-and-D guy? There's your 3-and-D guy. Tops in the leagues in 3-point shooting, and he's a defensive, you know, defensive stopper. He does very well on defense. There's your 3-and-D guy.
Yeah, his contributions are very even when it comes to his total points added scored on offense and defense.
Yes, Devin.
Like Hayward has a huge offensive plus and a mild defensive plus for his score.
Right.
And Gobert has a mildly nice offensive score and a huge defensive score. Joe's pretty even contributor in both categories. So, yeah, he's...
Go ahead, Devin. You
great this year.
You've been chomping at the bit. Go ahead.
No. We're talking about Joe Ingles, you know, that guy who's not an NBA player, not an NBA talent.
The guy that Doc Rivers gushed over when they let him go out of the Clippers, right?
I have loved the guy since he came to the Jazz.
So have I.
You know, and it's just, he's such a team player. You know, he makes the right pass. I wish he would regain the confidence in his shot. I feel like he's kind of lost that as of late because he seems to pass up the three. But that's also a good thing at times, because if he's not feeling good about it, don't just start chucking him up, because we've seen guys like that, CJ Miles, for example,
right,
come through Utah. But, man, I don't get it. I don't get how people don't – how every single Jazz fan, how every single basketball fan does not absolutely love this guy.
And to your couple of points there, he's not the only one on the Jazz that's been passing up shots. Rodney's been passing up threes. You've had a couple players, even last night in the game, there was a couple times I thought, guys, just take the shot you're given. And from what we heard, you know, from what I've heard on the radio since, Quinn Snyder has chided him on it, because Snyder's, you know, you know, way of doing things there is, you got the shot, take it. And you had guys that passed up a couple shots last night. Rodney Hood passed up a couple big ones. But you know, we talked about Joe Ingles and his improvement. You know, he's improved on defense. The one area that I've liked he's improved on with his shooting is the guy's got a much quicker release this year than he's ever had.
It's still not that quick.
But it's not. But it's quicker than it's been. In past years, it's really, we've always called him Slow-Mo Joe, and not just because of how he moves on the court, but he winds up for that shot real slow. But he has really, that release has been, you don't give him too much of a window because he's fairly quick on it this year.
Here's the thing. Joe Ingles is a combination of Steph Curry, Kawhi Leonard, and Fasinko. I think there's a little bit of Fasinko's personality.
Wait, you threw Fasinko. Oh, wow. Wow.
He's funny. He hits the shots. Oh, come on. We got to get Joe to All-Star Weekend. Let Joe shoot or something
and
like
he's
that.
And he's got the best radio show in town, the Joe Ingles Show on 1280. There, we've given the plug for 1280.
He's sophomore this year, isn't he? Can't he be in the rookie sophomore game?
No, he's a junior.
He is a junior.
Oh, is he?
Yes.
I made that same mistake previously just because Dante. You think about Dante as a sophomore, but he missed that whole season.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
So,
all right. So let's wrap up our talk on the Jazz. Is there anything else we want to add on, you know, Ingles, or do we want to add anything else on Gordon Hayward?
Not on Gordon Hayward. He should be in the All-Star game. You mentioned Rodney Hood's confidence. The Cleveland game was the first time in six games that Rodney has been a positive in the plus minus.
And so by the way,
to see him come back like that.
It took him almost three quarters to get there too, because the first half of last night, he didn't have it. And you could tell he didn't have it. And one last thought, another player, Trey Lyles, had a horrible first half last night, but Quinn went back to him countless times in the second half and was rewarded as a result. So, no, you're right on Rodney. He has not had his confidence. It was good to see last night, late in the game.
And let's just touch on one other thing. Listeners probably know this if you're listening to our podcast. I think you follow the Jazz closely enough, but Alec Burks and Howell Neto seeing some time for the Salt Lake City Stars.
You're forgetting one. There were three players that were assigned.
Was Exuma signed?
I thought he was. Wasn't he, John?
He was previously. I do not believe he was in action tonight, though.
But I thought he was assigned down there. Wasn't he, John?
I saw that he was assigned. I don't know if he actually played in the game.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he did either. But I know all three of them were assigned down there for tonight's game. But you're right. Alec Burks and Neto got time tonight in the game, I believe.
And from what I hear, Neto looked good. Had a good all-around game.
Well, as we speak, the Utah Jazz just tweeted out, Alec Burks finished with 13 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists in 20 minutes of action for the Stars tonight. There you go for Burks.
What's your favorite number there?
The 5 rebounds.
You're wrong.
For me, a guard that gets that many rebounds is good. You want a guard getting rebounds.
John, correct the man. What is your favorite number there?
Read them off again.
13 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists.
In
20 minutes of play.
Hey.
What's your favorite number there, John?
20 minutes.
20 minutes of play.
My bad. I didn't know where you were going with that one. I did not. I tunneled out the 20 minutes. I got you.
That's fantastic.
That is huge. You get him some time on the floor, and that's going to be nice back in the NBA, regular season. And
that actually helps segue to one of our listener questions.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. So hold on. Devin, I think, had one last thought on that.
I was just going to say, This is why it was so important when we talked earlier. Actually, it was last year when we talked about the D-League affiliate coming back to Utah.
Yes.
This is where it starts to matter. The fact that we can have these guys on the bench for a Jazz game one night.
Yep.
And playing down at SLCC the next night.
Yep.
With the Stars. That is paying dividends now, I think, and it's only going to help the Jazz more as the season progresses and making sure that we have the depth, especially
working guys back from injury.
We've had the injury bug, so that's fantastic. Let's go to the listener question, though.
All right, John, give us listener questions.
First question was, what do we think of Alec Burks as a backup PG?
In fact, we had two people ask that same question today.
That's true. I like the idea. I think there are nights where, I mean, I'll put it this way. It was very clear the first, 20-ish games of the season that Mac was outplaying Exum, much to the chagrin of a lot of fans, but it statistically bore out. Lately, that is no longer the case. In fact, of the total point added metrics, Mac is actually doing more harm than Exum at this point. I like the idea of a veteran guy like Burks who could run the point. The way the Jazz offense is, it really doesn't matter who the point guard is. Well, George Hill kind of changes that, but their sets are so much of run the ball down the court, pass it to each other two or three times at the top, really, and then you have your offense set. So I think Burks would be great for that, especially when there are nights that the other guards aren't playing well. I think they probably do need to have a quicker hook at this point because, it's win now. And, it's just not bearing out lately. I mean, especially since Hill came back and Mac is the backup point guard instead of playing with the starters. He hasn't played well in a while. I'm just looking at the box scores and, his plus minus the past few games, -5, -8, -8, -7, -11. +2 in a 12-point win against Brooklyn, -5, -14. His last decent game was a +3 in a 2-point win against the Lakers. That's the last time he actually did better than what the team did.
But I'm going to give my thoughts on Burks there in a second, but I'm going to go to Exum here for a moment. You have to believe, though, that there's a reason why he's getting that time, and it isn't just because you're concerned about Exum. I have to believe that Quinn is much more comfortable with that cushion with Mac right now than anybody else.
They brought in Mac last year. They gave him the starting job, and he excelled at that. He was just that much better than Neto or Burke. And it just bore out. That was clearly the right choice. And right. They came so close to the playoffs with him as their starting point guard. For half of the season.
Right. So my thoughts on Burks, I agree. I could see him as backup point guard, I think, in short stints. And that's where we've seen him before. Last year, we all called for that big lineup to end the games with Burks at the point and those types of things. And yeah, I'd love to see that on occasion. I think Burks can spell some time for George Hill off the bench. The other nice part about that, and really, it's a luxury when you watch the way that Quinn kind of works his lineups a little bit. If you have Burks in there, you can probably give Hayward and or Hood a little bit more of rest periods in between, a little bit more overlapping when you have him in, because you can bring him in for George Hill. And then when you bring George Hill back, Burks can move to the two. You can have either Hayward or Hood at the three. I mean, there's really a lot of lineup possibilities, a lot of guys. I mean, it's a beautiful luxury to have. And Burks at the point guard is intriguing, but I think more than anything, it gives you endless possibilities with him in the lineup.
Yep, I agree.
So, Devin, you're shaking your head. What do you think?
I understand the desire for Alec Burks to be a point guard because you've got the depth there with Ingles playing well, with Hood, with Hayward. We still think Hayward can play the two. When he came into the league, I liked him as the big two guard. But I can see it temporarily here and there for a little bit. But the fact is the Jazz either need to commit to Exum as their backup potential future starter, or they need to move on from Exum sometime soon. I'm not saying this season, I'm not saying next season.
Nor are you saying they have to move on.
No, but I wouldn't.
Right.
I am still a firm believer that Dante Exum has a lot of room to grow and that he will get there. I think he's just had that big setback.
Right.
He played with a mediocre team his rookie season. He missed his sophomore season, and he's still getting back. You know, we're about halfway into really his second season when you think about it.
Right.
And his role has changed, you know.
It has.
And the position he's playing. But to me, Alec Burks is really a two. And you have to consider playing him a two and just kind of work with the flexibility. Yeah, he might see some time.
Right.
But the only way I think that you can play him as your point guard is if Hayward's on the floor. I don't know that you can play
right
Alec Burks at a point guard any other time.
Right. Because you can go bigger lineup when you'd have it, like you're talking about.
Well, Hayward becomes your primary ball handler. It's right. essentially a LeBron James style right. offense. Right. So that's just my take on it.
Good point. Okay, before we get into the next question, thought I'd mention to you guys, the Utah Jazz tweeted out, Raul Neto ended the night with a near triple-double. 14 points, 12 assists, and 9 rebounds for the Stars tonight. It's a good night for
that's
Neto.
Actually Russell West Neto.
Russell West Neto. You struggled.
Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, you really struggled with that, didn't you?
I got in the middle of it and I tried to find my way out.
Any other questions we had? I think we had two other questions. One from our good buddy Jared. Did you see that one?
Jared, let me see.
Mr. Go the Distance. He kind of tweeted a little later tonight. He says he claims
man,
that
he
we
is, he I got a ton of mentions from him.
He claims that we have issues with bloggers being guests on our show. And I know it's just Jared. I know it's just Jared jabbing at me. It's because he likes to be that way. But he wanted to point out that we aren't very good at having you know regular bloggers on the show.
Yeah, I don't like bloggers. I don't like bloggers on podcasts. I just don't think they know enough of what they're talking about.
Well, and Jared does. Jared is on a podcast himself. He's on a podcast in our network, the Touchline Podcast for RSL. So big props to Jared. Anyway, Jared, love you, man. Just I appreciate it when you
we'll
jab at me. Yeah, we can have
eventually.
Him
eventually.
Hit the question. Hit the question. I want to know what it is.
What question?
I thought there was a question.
Well, that was his question. Now we'll go to the big meat question because this one, John and I, we had thrown it. Go ahead and give me that look. John and I had this question thrown at us last week. We just didn't have time to jump into it. I don't know how much time we have tonight, but John, let's jump into it for a few minutes.
Well, Brian wanted to know how many games the Jazz have lost by blowing a lead in the second quarter. The second quarter is a hard one to calculate. I thought the query that you came up with was a pretty interesting one to look at. The Jazz have only lost two games where they were 5 and under. And the shooting is lower in that compared to overall. The Jazz average 43.6% field goal, and they average a minus 0.3 in the plus minus overall. In those games where they've lost in the second quarter, let's see, it goes, looks like an average of minus 4.7. So yeah, when they go down in the second quarter, that does tend to affect what their record is overall. It's just the second quarter is kind of a hard one to quantify. One thing I was really encouraged with in going through all their wins and losses, there's only one game that the Jazz have lost by more than 15 points, but there's 8 where they've won by more than 15 points.
There's a stat
for you. I thought it was cool to see that the spread is going like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, Brian, we hope we answered the question, but yeah, I mean, we did a little it, for fans that want to know, I just went out to NBA.com/stats and I tried to tinker with the filters a little bit to see if we could find an answer to this question. That's why I come up with this query. But when all is said and done, I mean, that second quarter, I think I'll agree with Brian. I think it is pretty critical to have, you know, and you pointed out just how critical we have the sample size of 40 games right now. But yeah, it's that second quarter has been crucial in a lot of situations. But I like that stat that you discovered from this query. I didn't realize the Jazz have only lost one game by 15 or more points. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, there was that 40-point blowout against the Warriors.
Yeah.
And all other games have been, all of their losses have been by 15 or less. So that was nice to see.
Brian, I'll answer it for you. The answer is 3. if you can find anything that says otherwise, please send it to us. Otherwise, let's just say it's 3.
Wow.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right. So that's our listener questions. We appreciate everybody's feedback. So please feel free to chime those in with us anytime you feel the need. All right. With that, let's move on to Devin's quick hits.
You guys want to talk about some basketball a little bit more?
I'm game.
Let's do it.
Okay. LeBron James, does he get the Shaq treatment on the court? Is he beat up a little bit and really doesn't get the benefit of the whistle? Now think about this, because it's odd to say that about a superstar.
Especially a guy who I still think gets a lot of calls in his favor anyway.
Right.
I think you could argue that at times. I do think at times he probably gets bullied around, but I think it's his style of play though too.
I mean, I think everyone does.
Yeah.
I mean, I go back to the last game of the season last year against the Lakers, where Gordon Hayward got clotheslined over and over, and they wouldn't call it. I mean, any player who's ever been fouled and it's not called is going to feel that. And if LeBron's feeling it too, I understand. But like, all the players get that. I think the only one who doesn't is James Harden.
I was just about to mention Mr. Harden, because I would agree with you. The other person I might agree with that is his former teammate, because I think that Durant probably, I'm sure he probably feels that way, but Durant gets to the foul line a lot as well. So I don't know if, I don't know. It's interesting. There could be something to
like, LeBron's so strong that he can absorb more. And that's where the Shaq comparison is not unreasonable.
Is there any, were you going anywhere?
Favors gets hammered all the time. And
yes, he does.
There's a lot of no calls with that. So,
and maybe
it is something with bigger players. The calls aren't coming as often as they should.
Let's be fair. Officiating the last couple of years has really been atrocious in the league at times.
Alan, you can't say that. We'll get fined.
I'm sorry. My bad. Just say
there's been a lot of tough calls the past couple of years.
Were you going anywhere with that other than that, Devin?
I was. I was going there, and we got there. So let's go on to the next question.
Excellent. Next question.
Russell Westbrook still averaging a triple-double. Does he get there at the end of the year? Let's talk about it. I mean, we keep asking this question, but it seems more and more likely as we go along.
After the first quarter of the season, I was saying, no way. We're halfway through the season now. I got to believe he sustains it.
John?
Last time this came up, I believe I said that he would sustain it, and I stand by that.
Okay. Now I'm going to hit you with the second part of this. Okay. Is that enough to get him the MVP, or will Harden take home the hardware?
Ooh,
that would be a great title. That's a great title.
I think Westbrook will be the MVP if the Thunder finish in the top four. But if the Thunder are not in the top four and the Rockets are, I think your edge is going to Harden.
And if the Jazz have anything to say about it, I'd have to believe that the Thunder will not get there.
So let's say that the Jazz really catch fire, pass the Rockets. Memphis falls off for some reason, and let's just pretend that the Jazz are 3, the Rockets are... No, let's say Memphis stays there. Let's put the Memphis at 4, and then let's put Rockets at 5, and Thunder at 6.
That's an awfully bad fall for the Rockets. I don't see it happening.
I just want to know if you've got them side by side there, or 4 and 5, if you will.
Right.
If there's one place difference.
At this point in time, I'd want to give the MVP to Russ. I think Russ deserves it. The fact that I don't like Harden and wouldn't want to give it to him. So, you know, but no, I
even those guys are having statistically amazing seasons, but if their teams finish 5th and 6th respectively, don't you have to give harder looks at what Durant and Leonard and LeBron were doing?
Agreed. Which that was my next question is, we're talking about Russ and Harden. When does LeBron enter that conversation for MVP? I'm not sure you can give an MVP to anybody on Golden State, but I look at, and I know I'm going to hear about that Golden State comment from Sean later. You know it, Devin. I will. But with all of that said, when does LeBron enter the statement?
He doesn't.
Why?
Because somewhere along the way, as amazing as LeBron is, there's something about him playing in the East, I think, that people are just like, well, it doesn't matter. It's not the same as the West, or, well, LeBron's always done that, or, well, LeBron has Love and Kyrie. He's got his own super team like Golden. It just, he's not going to get the credit he deserves.
But yet they'll give the award to Steph Curry in a team where he's got Klay Thompson and, you know.
Don't get me started.
I know.
Don't get me started on that unanimous MVP crap.
I'm just saying.
Because we all know that Steph Curry really did not deserve the first unanimous MVP.
John, just break all of this. Who wins MVP this year, in your mind?
I think it's, Westbrook.
Okay. I'm in agreement.
All right. Let's jump to something else.
He'll be the first guy in forever to average a triple-double. I think that's ultimately going to get it to him.
Yep.
So Ice Cube is doing a 3-on-3 league with a bunch of ex-NBA guys, such as Allen Iverson. I want to say like Chauncey Billups is in this. Does something like that interest you, or do you really not care about 3-on-3 with retired guys?
I would watch probably one game of that, and that would probably satiate my curiosity, and that'd be it.
I'll tell you right now, I don't care.
Okay. If you don't care, then let's talk about something else.
Yep.
A while back, we talked about a Mayweather-Conor McGregor boxing match, and this goes completely past Alan. Alan does not care. Alan does not understand. it don't matter to the Zog.
I gave him the look and
so,
it worked.
John, I'm going to talk to you. McGregor wanted $100 million for this fight, and Mayweather has actually come back and said he'll do the fight, but he's only going to offer $15 million.
50?
15. 1-5.
15? God, Mayweather is such a jerk.
If you're McGregor, would you take that? It's easy for us to say, because if you offer me $1 million to get in the ring with Floyd Mayweather, I would just fall down and take the $1 million.
Right.
But I don't know. $15 million it's not $100 million, but that's still a decent amount of cash. For a guy who I don't believe he's been pulling in that much money UFC.
I think you try to go higher, but not to the point where the fight doesn't happen. I think the fight has to happen. I mean, if he said he'll actually do it, then yes, please make this fight happen.
It's an intriguing matchup. So yeah, we'll have to see, but you know, when you're getting 15% of what you're asking for.
Yeah, that's why he should counter. The thing is, Floyd doesn't really need to fight anymore. He's insanely rich. He can retire on his undefeated streak. I really hated watching him box, but he did manage to win. So,
yay boxing! Okay,
let's talk about let's talk about some foosball.
I know you're going to bring up that national title game.
No, we're talking
no.
We're talking about the playoffs. playoffs.
The playoffs. Okay.
Wild card is over. And
okay.
We have everything set up. Alan, shut up.
No. We need to talk about who won their predictions last week.
Blind squirrel found a nut. I don't remember who predicted what. Maybe John wrote it down. I did not. I think
it's all blur.
Everybody picked the Steelers.
Everybody.
Alan, you picked the Giants.
I did. Okay. But no. I leveled it off with my pick of the Raiders game.
And who'd you pick between the Lions and the Seahawks?
I don't remember
that one.
I
thought you took Detroit.
Oh, hush.
Okay, so.
You did? Oh, my gosh, you did. So we actually did better.
Yeah.
Okay, so Devin and John were 3-1. Alan was 2-2. Anyway, get to your.
let's talk about the division round. Okay, so things are set up. Let's hurry and go. Seahawks, Falcons on Saturday. Who you got, Alan?
Against my hatred, I'll have to pick the Seahawks. Is that in
Seattle? In Atlanta.
Or it's in Atlanta?
It's at Atlanta.
That's an intriguing game to me. I'd say the Seahawks, but home game for Atlanta, that could prove decent for them. I'll take Seahawks.
John?
I have to take Seahawks. Even though they're missing Earl Thomas and it's on the road, I gotta take them.
I'm gonna take them as well, even though my mind says to take Falcons, but I've learned I got to listen to my heart.
I listen to my
heart
on that.
I'm going to count on Richard Sherman to shut down Julio Jones and just, you know, pull it
off. I listen to my heart on that Raiders game, so just saying.
Okay, Texans, Patriots.
Patriots.
We really didn't need to talk about this, did we?
Nope.
Okay, so everyone's taking the Patriots. Steelers at the Chiefs.
Ooh. Didn't the Steelers suffer an injury on Sunday in their game or no? I don't remember if they did or not.
I thought that giant drubbing.
Maybe they didn't. I'm gonna take the Steelers on that. Ben Roethlisberger, playoff general. I have to take the Steelers.
Well, I mean, they're saying Roethlisberger injured his foot, but not enough to like keep him out of the game.
Okay.
But it makes you wonder. You know, I think the Steelers should win because they've been playing so great, but so is the Chiefs, and I haven't really paid that close attention to the Chiefs. I'm just going to go ahead and pick the Chiefs.
Okay.
Okay. I feel like I should pick the Steelers, but I'm going to go with Alex Smith and the Chiefs. You know, John, I think you're cheering for Andy Reid.
Mm-hmm.
And Alan, I think you're just throwing out guesses here at this point.
No, I'm not.
So, okay. Game of the weekend in my mind. Packers, Cowboys.
The Giants. No, I'm kidding. See, you're telling me that just I'm just throwing out names. Packers, Cowboys. And it is in Texas Stadium.
Now, I saw that Ezekiel Elliott was in a car accident, but I don't believe any injury he sustained was going to keep him out of the game. So I think they'll be okay that way. And as such, I think the Cowboys will win handily.
Well, venue decides it all for me. Cowboys. If it was in the frozen tundra, I'd say Green Bay. But it's at home. Cowboys. Yeah, Cowboys will win it.
You know what I have to say about that? Discount double check.
Oh my gosh. Are you taking the pack?
I'm gonna back the pack.
Wow.
Are you really?
Wow.
Yeah, I'm gonna take a chance.
You got the gutsy pick this week.
Well, hey, let's
going against the Cowboys offensive line.
I am. And you've got a couple rookies. They played fantastic all season. But if things should get a little bit rattled, they're going to send in Tony Romo to the rescue. And there's something about Dallas where they always, always find a way to blow it.
But you're also going against the two lost Dallas Cowboys. I mean, they had a heck of a season. There's a reason that they've got home field throughout in the NFC. Like I said, if it was in the frozen tundra, I'd pick the pack, but it's not. I can't.
I don't know. Let me ask you this. Could you look Aaron Rodgers in the eyes and not be at least a little bit worried?
Yeah. Well, of course.
I think Aaron Rodgers has been great, especially late in the season.
But Aaron Rodgers also doesn't have the offensive line that Dallas does.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, the Giants didn't really have the momentum when they played him last week, but the Cowboys have all the momentum in the world. I just think they're too good for Aaron to overcome it this year.
Well, we'll see. We will see. I'm going to take a chance.
Okay.
I guess there was another football game maybe we need to talk about a little bit. Some team from the South played another team from the South, but they're in different conferences, and there was a trophy.
And I watched the fourth quarter. I didn't watch the rest. Nick Saban lost. wait. Lost in all of that is that final statement. Nick Saban lost. Okay.
Clemson beats Alabama. Alan, you said you watched the fourth quarter.
I did.
John, did you watch any of the game, all of the game, some of the game?
I watched most of the first quarter and then most of the fourth quarter.
Okay. I did not watch the game until my DVR show got over and I went, if it's a one possession game, I'm going to watch it. Do you know how much time was left? About 7 minutes. I watched the last 7 minutes, and that's really all I needed to watch. It was the perfect amount of football.
John, you watched the first quarter. I heard that Alabama was up pretty big at one point in time, and everybody thought Clemson was dead in the water.
I'm trying to remember. I mean, it was a low scoring. Let's see. I think Alabama scored their touchdown at the end of the first quarter. And if I remember right, it was 21-14 at halftime or 21-7 at halftime, something like that.
Right. And maybe that's why I saw, because I look across my Twitter timeline, a lot of people were saying, they're dead in the water. Clemson's done. Bama's up 2 touchdowns. It's over.
Well, Bama had to punt the first 2 or 3 times.
Right.
But my favorite thing out of that game was someone sent out a tweet of the final touchdown. They said it's that much better when you have it to Titanic music. Oh. So he scores the touchdown, the Titanic music kicks in.
Oh, gosh. I missed meme. I missed that meme badly. That's awesome.
Oh, have you seen that account?
No.
You need to go find that account on Twitter.
The one that does those memes?
Yes, because they did a video of John Stockton hitting the shot.
To what?
To Titanic music.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
And it was fantastic.
I can't remember what. Do you remember what that account's called? It's like Titanic in Sports or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah. It can't be that hard to find.
What I'm going to say, what I am going to say about that fourth quarter, you know, we talked about the quarterback for Clemson, and I don't know why his name is slipping my mind, but
Deshaun Watson.
There you go, Watson. He's been so good all season long, but I felt like the best player in the fourth quarter was not Deshaun Watson. It was their wide receiver, Williams.
Oh, man, those catches.
Holy crap. Incredible. Catch after catch. And that one that he pinned between his thighs, that catch that got them the first down, that really gave them the momentum, that catch was unbelievable. So, I mean, Watson was great, but, man, did he have a guy he could throw to make it happen. I mean, Williams set some big plays up, you know, set them up on big plays in that fourth quarter. So
I guess what we're getting at, I know everyone's happy about this because how could you not be? Is this an instant classic?
I think so.
That exchange, because like I said, I didn't watch the whole game, but just that last, I think it was like the last four or five drives.
Yeah. I mean, well, even 7 minutes, 8 minutes that you're talking about.
It was so back and forth. You're like, oh, if they get this, maybe they'll win. And then the other team goes right down and scores. Okay, well, this is over. Well, maybe it was fantastic. The only thing that would have been better, I don't know. I would like to say if they just completely beat down Bama like the Utes did in the Sugar Bowl years ago. But I kind of like the ripping your heart out with 1 second left on the clock feeling.
And they did it. They did indeed do it. All right.
Life's good.
Yes, it is.
Let's go to pop culture.
All right. So quick hits out of the way. John, let's jump to pop culture. You got a few things to talk about.
Yeah. First, I caught up on a couple movies. I actually did wind up seeing Passengers. I know you talked about that.
What was your thoughts?
I liked most of the movie, but man, did I hate that ending.
You didn't like that, huh?
No, I hated it. I probably don't want to spoil it, but I just really viscerally disliked how
I want to hear your thoughts in a message later because I'm intrigued by why you didn't like it.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I also saw Hidden Figures, which is the movie about the three African American women who were crucial in the NASA space program to get John Glenn up into space. And, you know, people haven't really heard their story.
Their story's
out in movie form, and it's great. I really enjoyed it. They decided to take a family-friendly approach to the story, which is nice. Instead of making it this giant tearjerker injustice thing, it hits all that. I mean, you have visceral reactions when you see, you know, whites and coloreds and those kind of labels, because it is 1961 in Virginia.
Wasn't Kevin Costner in this?
But Kevin Costner's in it. He plays a compilation of a bunch of different figures, but he's the director of NASA in this, and he is really good. He is really good at that straightforward, you know, 60s man that just stands there with his 2 feet, looks you in the eye, and tells you exactly what he's thinking. And he was really good as the boss. Taraji P. Henson from Empire, she was great as Catherine, the lead. Janelle Monáe, who's mainly a singer, she was really good in her role. Octavia Spencer, she was actually nominated for a Golden Globe for her role. I didn't think it was that type of role, but, you know, she's always good, so okay. Jim Parsons from The Big Bang Theory, he's really good at playing a jerk. There's a lot to really like in this, and I would recommend it. It was the number one movie over the weekend, and I think with good reason. So I'm happy for its success.
Well, my wife and my kids have wanted to see it as well, and I think we will. What I like about it, without even seeing it, is what Hollywood's done with this. You've got, you know, a couple of women in the lead role, and not only that, but you've got it. It's a minority situation, really, in the lead roles, and it's at a time where racism was an even bigger issue back in the 60s, and you've got both of those going against these women to move up. You know, both that they're women and there's the race card, that to move up and get into NASA and do this. And I'm intrigued already just from the trailers alone. I don't know how much time they spent on those issues. Can you tell me without ruining it, do they spend a lot of time on those issues?
It's pretty evenly distributed. I mean, in my review, I wrote how it's a sign that a movie is this well done, that you're never bored by the amount of screen time they spend of people just staring at complicated math equations on chalkboards.
Okay.
It really is about they're smart, but then also these obstacles that they had to overcome just to be able to do their job. Whereas if it was three white men, they wouldn't have near the problems they had
in 1960s era. Jobs. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it does a good job with all of that. It lets you feel the injustice of it without wallowing in it or hitting you over the head. It was just like, this is a very real problem back then, and this is what they had to deal with just to be able to do their jobs. So, yeah, it was very effective in that way.
Sweet. Well, I'm looking forward to it. What else you got?
I was going to go over my best and worst movies of 2016.
Okay.
I guess I will start with worst first. Fifth worst, Independence Day Resurgence. The sequel comes 20 years later. If you're going to do a sequel to a movie, I think like 3 years after the first one is ideal. By doing it 20 years later and not having Will Smith, it tried to recapture 90s hokiness that worked in the 90s that just does not work now.
Recipe for failure.
I felt bad for Jeff Goldblum in this movie. I didn't like what they did with Bill Pullman. Brent Spiner is amusing, in spurts, but his part was like way too big. I'm like, I didn't miss him that much. And the lead was Liam Hemsworth, who is like the less charismatic Hemsworth brother. And just didn't really care about any of these characters. And I kind of wanted the aliens to win.
All right. You summed up my thoughts on it. All right. What's number four on that list?
Number four was Regression. This was from the writer-director of The Others, which was a very excellent ghost movie with Nicole Kidman from 2001. I was disappointed in this effort. It's about a cop investigating a teenage girl who claims that her family was part of this satanic sex cult that molests kids, and then they suppress their memories, and there's a psychologist who's trying to help them regress in their memories and remember what actually happened. And Ethan Hawke is this cop who's investigating it, and he's thrashing all over the place. But I guess the ending in the first few minutes, and it's supposed to be like this twist, but it wasn't. It was obvious to me from the beginning where it was going to go. And so you just spend the whole time slogging through this child molestation subplot, and it was just icky and boring, and Emma Watson didn't have much to do, and it was not worth it. So if you see it on Amazon and you're tempted, I'd say you're probably better off not. Number three was Yoga Hosers. This was the latest movie from Kevin Smith. Kevin Smith has made movies I have liked. I saw this at Sundance. Kevin Smith was there in person. He introduced the movie to us, then we watched it, and then he came out for a Q&A afterwards with the cast. One thing he said in his Q&A was that he didn't really care what audiences felt. He just wanted to make movies that he liked. And it's very clear from this movie. I'm sure it amused him, but it is so stupid. The plot is, it's up in Canada, and there's this mad scientist who knows how to turn sausages into Nazis. So these footlong sausages now have CGI faces on, and they have little Canadian Mountie uniforms, really, but then they're Nazis. So the nickname is they're Bratzies, because they're bratwurst Nazis.
And the more they describe this, the worse it gets, John. Come on.
It gets worse. They do this jibber-jabber thing, and the way they kill people is they crawl up people's butts and then come out of their mouths.
Oh, God. All right, suddenly I'm having...
Like, why?
I'm having reminders back to The Mask and monkeys crawling up.
It's
so
it's really stupid.
You know, that happened in another movie.
Oh, dear.
It was called Flubber.
Oh, my goodness.
With Robin Williams.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
But he didn't die.
Right.
In this one, they die, which is reasonable.
It's less comical, it sounds like.
Number two was a horror movie called The Other Side of the Door. It starred Sarah Wayne Callies from Prison Break and The Walking Dead. It's pretty much a ripoff of Pet Sematary. Tried to be original by being set in India. So it's this white family living in India. But it's just not remotely scary. And
I think he said Other Side of the Door, annoying. Not Other Side of the Pillow, right?
It's The Other Side of the Door.
I'm just kidding. For those who don't remember that, I'm going back to the old Stuart Scott days. You know, smooth as the other side of the pillow. Anyway.
Ah, yes. And for me, the worst movie of the year was Allegiant. It's the third movie in the Divergent series. It was a movie so bad that they went ahead and canceled the finale. They said maybe they'll do a TV movie to wrap it all up, but the studio got greedy. It was a trilogy. The first movie did well, so they decided they would do what Hunger Games did and split the third book into two movies. Giant mistake. I didn't like the second movie very much. The third movie was even worse. It kind of made you tired of dystopian cliches, and it's just one where you just don't care and you just wish all the characters would die. So that was the one I picked for worst of the year. So there are other bad movies I saw that weren't quite in my bottom five. Suicide Squad, bad. Alice Through the Looking Glass, bad. But you know, those were the worst movies of the year for me.
On that Divergent series, by the way, my daughter read the books, my oldest. Everybody does die pretty much, so no surprise
there. Well,
thanks
for the spoilers, Alan.
Yeah, my wife didn't like the third book. My daughter kind of did, but she told me some of the main characters that die, and it's just like, well, I'm never going to read the series anyway.
That's why
I did read the first book, and then that was enough for me.
And that's why I was half sarcastic, because not everybody dies, but everybody important. My daughter always talked about it. It was kind of funny. I'm joking. Anyway, carry on. Top movies.
Okay. I still have some Oscar bait movies I want to see, so I'll probably, this could change later after I've seen a few more of them. But for me, my top five movies, number five was Nocturnal Animals. And this was a movie that I know some people hated. The opening credits are a giant turnoff, and I would recommend people to just close your eyes during the opening credits, but it does have a point as far as how it plays out in the rest of the movie. I just thought this movie was perfectly constructed. It's about a woman who gets a manuscript from her ex-husband that she hasn't seen in like 10 or 15 years. And she starts reading this story, and so then you have a movie within a movie where she's reading the story and it's playing out, and Jake Gyllenhaal plays not only her husband, but he plays the main character in the book. And as she gets deeper in the book, you kind of realize how the book's a metaphor for their relationship, and I just thought it was terrific. Number four is La La Land. I love this movie. I thought it was breezy and fun, and maybe it's peaked too soon. I'm starting to see some backlash since it won a bunch of Golden Globes. But it really is a fun movie about life in LA. The songs and dances are great. I mean, Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone aren't great dancers per se, but I liked the almost an amateur vibe about it. Kind of reminded me of the Mickey Rooney, Judy Garland musicals, really. Number three was Lion. This is a movie about a little boy in India who gets lost, and he can't communicate well enough to people to figure out how to get back home. And he ultimately gets adopted by an Australian couple. And then as an adult, he just feels all these pangs of his homeland. And so he tries to figure out if he can, just from childhood memories of streets, go on to Google Earth and see if he just can't find the neighborhood that he grew up in. Dev Patel plays the main kid all grown up trying to go back. Nicole Kidman plays his adoptive mother. Very, very powerful, especially if you have adopted kids, which we do. My wife cried probably the entire last half hour of the movie. Very good, very powerful. Number two was Arrival. This is the Amy Adams movie about aliens that come here and they're trying to figure out what the purpose of the aliens are. I don't think we've ever seen a movie quite like this where so much is spent on trying to figure out communication with the aliens. And I also liked how it wound up being a very personal movie about the Amy Adams character. So I loved it. And my favorite movie of the year was Hell or High Water. This is a modern day Western with Chris Pine and Ben Foster as bank robber brothers. And Jeff Bridges is the marshal who wants to catch them before he retires. It's just a flat out terrific movie that goes back and forth between the characters. You see all points of view. You understand all points of view. You kind of want the marshal to catch his men, but you kind of want the brothers to get away with it too. So it's just really well done.
All right. Anything else on the Golden Globes you wanted to cover?
Yeah, La La Land won every Globe they were nominated for, which set a new record. But there was a lot of wealth spreading. The Oscar nominations are going to be in a couple days, and I don't think what happened at the Globes will affect nominations that much. In fact, if I remember right, Oscar nomination votes are locked in before Golden Globe winners are announced. But there was a lot of interesting winners. Aaron Taylor Johnson won for Nocturnal Animals. And while he was really good, I was surprised he was nominated in the first place. I thought Michael Shannon would get nominated, but he won. So good for him. And when he gave his acceptance speech, that's when I learned he was British. I had no idea he was British. But then so many actors do seem to be British these days. But Moonlight won Best Drama. Damien Chazelle for La La Land won Best Director. Let's see. And then there were a lot of weird ones on TV. The TV ones are weird. But Atlanta won Best Comedy, and The Crown won Best Drama, and The Crown's on Netflix. So those were the Golden Globes.
Sweet. One final note I didn't get a chance to tell you. A couple weeks ago, we rented Magnificent Seven.
Mm-hmm.
I believe you liked that one, didn't you?
Overall, I did.
Okay. We rented it as a family, and I really enjoyed it. I'm always a sucker for a good gun-toting Western, and it did not disappoint for me.
Yeah, my experience with Magnificent Seven, I was really angry when I went to read, I think it was Variety's review, and the reviewer said right there in the first sentence, who survives? And I was so angry. There was no warning, and it was just like, oh my gosh. So when I saw that movie, I was just resenting the whole time that I knew who survived. But I was still able to enjoy it. I did not like the villain. The villain was way too cartoony for me. But I really liked the seven coming together. Denzel's always good. I really liked Ethan Hawke in that movie.
Yeah, he was good.
He was probably my favorite character. Him and Byung-Hun Lee, their relationship, I thought that was probably my favorite part of the movie.
What about D'Onofrio?
D'Onofrio was great. I mean, they were all great.
I know. His character cracked me up, though. Seriously. I actually laughed about him most of the movie just because of the type of character he was. It was entertaining for me to see him that way. So, yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to share my thoughts. I really enjoyed it. Denzel Washington's one of my favorite actors all time, and so seeing him in that role was actually quite good for me too. So yeah.
And you ought to see Fences.
I know. I want to. I've heard some wonderful things about it. You know, you're one of the ones that's talked about it. So I do. I want to see that. So let's wrap this up then. Let's put a bow on it and call it good. Thank you all for joining us. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, blogtalkradio.com, Facebook and Twitter. You can leave messages, you know, message us, leave comments, get in touch with us. You can also please take some time and leave feedback or review on our show. We would appreciate that very much on iTunes. And other than that, we'll look for you next week on another episode of Jedi and Germs. And talk to you later. John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.